Welcome to Writers Talking Screen, a podcast from the Writers Guild of Canada. In each episode, we focus on Canadian screenwriters and their art. Through deep dive interviews with the most talented screenwriters in the country, we talk about the craft of screenwriting, go behind the scenes on the writing of a particular series or film, and cover the most pressing issues in the industry today. In this episode, screenwriters Carly Smale and Kirsten Hansen talk to our guest host, Sonia Bennett, about how they got their start writing holiday movies of the week, how they structure their scripts, what it's like to work with networks like Hallmark, and so much more.
My name is Sonia Bennett. I'm a Vancouver-based TV writer. I've written on Kim's Convenience, Letterkenny, Ghost Wars, Hudson and Rex, and right now I'm writing on a show called Family Law. And I will be hosting tonight's discussion, which is all about holiday movies of the week, which I'm excited about because Christmas movies are most definitely a guilty pleasure for me, as I know they are for a lot of people. Now, I would like to introduce our two panelists, Carly Smale and Kirsten Hansen. Carly is a screenwriter and rom-com connoisseur who has earned several writing credits in the television movie space. Her credits include Snowden Christmas, Christmas Pen Pals, Midnight at the Magnolia, and the upcoming Discovery Plus original film, A Gingerbread Christmas. In February 2022, Midnight at the Magnolia was nominated for Best TV Movie at the Canadian Screen Awards and spent over a month trending worldwide on the Netflix top 10 list. Awesome. So if you want to go back and watch this on the YouTube channel, here is where we are going to include a trailer for A Gingerbread Christmas. Kirsten Hansen is an award-winning Canadian writer, director, producer based out of Vancouver. Nice to have a fellow Vancouverite here. She is the writer of Love on the Slopes, Return to Christmas Creek, Love Under the Rainbow, Christmas on My Mind, and the Leo Award-winning Cross Country Christmas. And she is the co-writer, director of Nantucket Noel for Hallmark Channel, to name a few. Her upcoming feature film, romantic comedy, Irish Wish, starring Lindsay Lohan, which Kirsten wrote and executive produced, is set for release on Netflix next year. If you want to go back and watch the YouTube video, this here is where we're going to include a trailer for Cross Country Christmas. Thank you both for being here and joining us on Writers Talking TV. Thank you. I'm really excited. So, first question. You know, I think almost everyone on this chat, if not everyone, is a television writer. So, you know, questions are going to be partly creative and partly, you know, business and how to get your start doing things. And in this case, writing holiday movies of the week. So maybe, Kirsten, let's start with you. How did you get into writing holiday movies of the week?
Okay. Well, I have a bit of a roundabout way of getting into it. I actually was writing when I was working in development for a company, because I did that before I became a freelance writer. So I was in development for about 15 years and before I went freelance. And I actually was part of the development and writing of some Christmas movies that were family films, like the Santa Pups and Santa Buddies and those kinds of films. I was a part of the production of. And then when I went freelance, I actually started in TV with Chesapeake Shores with Hallmark Channel. And then from that, see, with Hallmark, that's who I have most of my, well, all of my holiday movie credits are through Hallmark Channel. And in order to write for Hallmark Channel, you need to be approved as a writer for Hallmark Channel. So it was sort of a roundabout process that I was writing. I was approved and writing on the first season Chesapeake Shores. Because I was approved, a producer approached me about writing Love on the Slopes. It was a pitch he had. So that movie, and because that went really well, the executive that I worked with, who was amazing, asked me to come on board their movie Return to Christmas Creek. And so that's how it was, sort of a roundabout process. You know, it didn't come by me like pitching them something. It yeah, it was like a three-step process before I wrote a holiday film for them. So, and that was my first one. And it was an existing movie that they had a script for, and they loved the concept of it, but they wanted Hallmark wanted to take it in another direction and change it. And so they came to me and I had some ideas. And so then I rewrote it and worked with the producer who was on board the film originally. And yeah, we got it to a place that was really good that we all were happy with. And that's sort of my jaunt into Christmas with Hallmark.
And then did you find that once you started writing the Christmas movies, that was a kept rolling?
Like, yeah, it's funny. It seems to be where that's definitely the demand, right? They make especially, and now there's so many different places, streamers and networks that are making holiday movies, but Hallmark is who I have worked with. So that's where my experience lies, but they make 30 movies a year, Christmas movies. I don't know the number. Maybe someone else can knows it in the chat, but they make so many. And I've been very fortunate that for the past 6 years, I've had one every year. I like to do one a year. That's like my goal is to be involved in at least one a year. That's my.
Okay. I have so many questions from that, but first I want to hear Carly's journey and how you came to be writing holiday movies of the week.
Sure. Yeah. So I went to film school at Humber in Toronto, and I specialized in screenwriting in my fourth year. And while I was in my fourth year, I also interned at a production company in Toronto that made a lot of these holiday movies, these Hallmark Christmas movies, and then some Lifetime thrillers. And I was just like super eager. I wrote my own treatments in my spare time, kept trying to slide them onto my boss's desk. And sometimes he would be like, "Hey, this is not your job." You know, at the time it was like, I don't know. I was just like an assistant. I was like picking up dry cleaning and stuff. I would just like slide things in here and there. And then when I graduated, they hired me on full time, just sort of as an assistant still. But eventually one of my ideas did sell. And then my boss was like, "Okay, you know what? You obviously understand this genre."
What company was this?
They're called Chesler Perlmutter.
Okay. And what's their specialty?
Christmas, like Hallmark and Lifetime Christmas movies, and then some thrillers.
All right. Okay. You said that. Yeah. So when you were sleeping treatments, were like, here's Christmas time at the cabin. Yeah. And here's murderer in the cabin.
Well, I was the only girl in the office at the time. So I knew that the guys, not to be stereotypical, but they didn't want to write the Christmas stuff. And they didn't really understand the demographic. And I was like, oh, let me just swoop in here.
So an opportunity.
Yeah. And after that one sold, it ended up being called On the 12th Day of Christmas. It sold to Hallmark. And then my boss gave me a lot more to write, a lot more responsibility. And then I was in 2015, I felt confident enough to quit and do it on my own. And so I wrote two scripts on spec. I moved back in with my parents, wrote two scripts on spec, and I found an agent, and then he sold both of them. So it's been really great. Yeah. Ever since about 2017. Yeah.
You're like the dream, you know, like success story. That's exactly what like people hope to have happen, right?
You're like in the movie version of this, that you're like hustling here. Read my
totally.
Coffee runs.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I very much still hustle, and like, we can talk about that later, but the hustle is real for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I've definitely been a hustle. Me too. Hustle.
Yeah.
Long road.
Also, I just want to add one thing. I did find out what the number was for this year for holiday movies across the board, like Netflix, mm-hmm. Hallmark, Lifetime, and it was 157. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's room for everybody to sell Christmas movies.
Yeah. There's such a high demand for it. Mm-hmm. Such a high demand.
Is Christmas movies almost solely what you write, Carly?
I've written one thriller that was made, but it's mostly Christmas. It's mostly anything like rom-com. is what I typically write. Yeah.
What did you think you were going to be writing when you were in film school? Like when you imagined, how does your career look compared to what you thought it would look like?
I mean, I'm like still shocked that it has worked out. I don't know if I really thought I would be able to be a screenwriter full time. It's like, it's pretty rare, and I'm pretty grateful. Yeah. I don't know. I think I always just thought I would have side jobs and then write when I could.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So how do you, I mean, I think we all know there's a certain, there are certain ingredients to a holiday movie of the week. What would you say, like when you are approaching a project, do you like innately understand, here are the key ingredients that need to go into this Christmas movie soup, and what are they? Does that question make sense? I don't know if I needed a soup analogy in that question.
I mean, from my experience, there's certain things that you sort of expect to see in a holiday movie. Like, you know, you want there's like this sort of like, you know, it's not a running joke, but it is kind of true that it's like with Hallmark, it's Christmas in every frame. Right. And that's like when you're in production, like you always got to see just a little speck of Christmas, just a little bit of holiday. Like I should in the background have, there should be a wreath. You know what I mean? Like there should be a little bit of lights, but the rule is also tasteful. Like it has to make sense. It can't just be there just to have like a something planted, you know, that's Christmas. But their whole thing is it needs to feel like Christmas, and it needs to feel like cozy and beautiful and comforting and bring joy. And so then the story should reflect that. Right. So it's the story first, but within that there's always set pieces. Right. And there's depending on, when you're shooting and what you can do, there's like a tree lighting, or, you know, if you can have real snow and do a snowball fight or a snowman contest or gingerbread baking cookies, all of that is really good and really easy because a lot of these movies are filmed in the summertime. So, you know, we don't always, doing a snowball fight, I've had to cut out of a couple of my movies because the reality of it was like, okay, we're not gonna be able to shoot that now. Like we're using fish ice.
Fish ice. I mean, I'm assuming fake ice, but like, why is it called fish ice?
I think it's literally the ice they use to store fish in, like that kind of ice. And that's our, you know, snow. And that's like the higher budget, the better quality is when you can get the fish ice, because it actually, you put that in all like the corners of the streets and things like that. And the, you know, to make it look more real, not just snow blankets. But so there's a lot of factors to just make it feel cozy. So it's anything that really, you know, that you do at Christmas time, if there's a Christmas market, those kinds of things, lots of family element, you know, and time where people can come together and caroling, you know, all the things that are typical Christmas. So you want to make sure you have a few of those elements in like each movie. But I mean, they're not sort of, you know, given to you, like you need to have this, it's sort of come up with, you know, what is a fresh way to tell the story and, you know, incorporating Christmas.
Yeah. I would just add that, the A story almost always is a romance. It's pretty rare that I see any of these where the romance is like a side plot. They're all pretty much rom-coms. The other thing I would add is, they usually like to have a family element, like a dad or a grandma or a kid. I know a lot of the networks love like an ambitious woman, that she's doing something, her job is something that isn't just like a baker or, I don't know. In my experience, the different networks have loved when the female protagonist is like in the tech industry, or she's sort of like, I think that's sort of a new thing in the last few years, but just sort of changing the stereotypes of different industries that women are in. So you can think about that when you're writing as well.
Yeah.
Sabrina, any other shifts that you've noticed while you've been writing holiday movies of trends? Things that evolve in what the networks are wanting?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's shifted so much. And I think it's also because there are so many movies now. So how do you keep it fresh? How do you come up with something that we haven't done before? And also seeing more diversity, more, you know, different stories. So they're not just so traditional, because there's been so many. It's like, how do we tell something that we haven't seen, you know, and trying to kind of reinvent that. I've noticed that there's definitely that demand. And this year, especially with Hallmark, they've really sort of opened up the stories they're telling. And you know, it's the romance is the sort of the main front and center, but they're very character driven. And that's one thing I really appreciate about these rom-coms is that, you know, like sometimes a big budget blockbuster type movie doesn't really have strong character arcs. Like, you know, it's like, oh, strong female. And then she sort of stays the same throughout and they're just, you know, fulfilling whatever the plot is and whatever's driving it. But these movies, and that's what like my notes they'll be about is really about character. It's really making sure that there is a strong emotional arc for them and what they learn and grow and that they change, like, and for the guy and the girl. And that's what's really evolved too, I've noticed, is that, you know, giving them equal ground so they are both real people and going through real journeys, you know, and I've noticed that for sure.
Why do you think that is, that holiday movies of the week are so character focused? I mean, that's so great as a writer. Is it because they're rom-coms? Is it budgetary? Like,
I guess, and maybe it's just to be relatable to the audience. So, you know, it's like I think the purpose of these movies is they bring joy, they bring comfort, but they're also relatable. Like people will tune in and it will get them in the Christmas spirit. It will remind them of happy times with their family or things that they, you know, look forward to. And I think they want to see themselves reflected on screen. And it's just way more satisfying to see somebody and really want to root for them because they're relatable in their arc, you know, and what, you know, and it's not always just a career arc. Like that is definitely a thing, but it's evolved a little bit. It's sometimes a deeper, more emotional arc that they're going through too. Not just like, I got to get the promotion. You know what I mean?
So as you're saying, what was the number? 157 were made this year.
I think so.
How do you keep it fresh? And do you feel, I mean, obviously you can't possibly watch all of these, but do you feel like, feel like you need to watch some to figure out what else is happening or going on? Or is it just too much to do that?
Yeah. I personally will watch like a couple. Yeah. I'll usually watch a couple on Netflix, a couple Hallmark, a couple Lifetime, just to see just what they're doing this year. If there's anything that I can pick up on or can inspire me or anything. But yeah, I don't know. For me, I just always think like, what do I want to watch? That's the best thing I can do, because if I start getting too in my head about trying to be fresh and different, and it's just not really that fun of a process. So I just try to go, okay, what is a fun idea that I would love to write and that I would actually want to watch and wouldn't make me, you know, cringe sharing it with my family and friends.
I'm the exact same way. Like, I think that's how you make it fresh, is that you just find something that you want to see. Like, what's the movie that you want to see? What movie, and has it been made yet? So write it, you know, and then you can incorporate Christmas into that if it doesn't, you know, I mean, obviously it needs to feel organic, but I think it's, yeah, what is the movie that you want to see? That's what I always do when I'm trying to develop it. And I remember when my first movie, Love on the Slopes, because I hadn't written for Hallmark before. And I remember the producers saying, like, you know, and crew who read it, like, this doesn't feel like your traditional Hallmark movie. And I was like, you know, I didn't really know it, like the formula so much. I grew up with like sort of British UK rom-coms, like that Working Title was Working Title Films was the company that I wanted to work for. I wanted to make movies with Hugh Grant. Like that was Richard Curtis. That was my dream when I was younger. They were like my film school. And And that's when rom-coms were sort of at their peak. And that's what influenced me. And that's what influences my writing still to this day. And so I wrote Love and the Soaps with that influence. And so to a lot of people that felt like it was fresh because it came from, I just had maybe did a different approach, I guess, but I didn't mean to be, I just was writing what I wanted to see. Right. And so, and I do think that's it is if you can write from a truthful place with these characters and really have them go through something that is like relatable and truthful, it will feel fresh because it's, and especially if it's something that you can relate to, because then it has, there's this honesty and realness to it. And then you can incorporate Christmas into that, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah. With that being said, oh, sorry.
No, just that's great advice. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. With that being said, sometimes you're brought an idea, and you sort of have to. Even if it doesn't excite you at the beginning. I mean, you can always say no. I'm always afraid to say no, but sometimes it will not excite you at the beginning, but. Yeah, you just have to work with what they give you and try and make it fresh and interesting to yourself because, yeah, sometimes you get pitched ideas to write and it's not like sparking much inspiration.
Yeah, and those are the ones I say no to because I just feel like unless, you know, depending on the circumstances, but I've been fortunate that like I just know myself. And I may be different than other writers, but I like totally just write from my heart. Like I need music playing. I like need to be like in it and feeling it and connected. Like I just, you know, I know other writers are just like, oh, here we go. And they just pound out stuff, but they're just like, it's like, it's words and they're just in the flow. But like, I need to like really connect to what I'm doing. And so if I get a pitch or something and I just know I'm not going to be the one to make it like, as good as it could be, or, you know, I will have to pass because I have to personally connect to it because I've noticed that sometimes I'll be on a project and say they come to me in the summertime and it's a quick rewrite, quick turnaround. You're only on it for maybe like 2-3 months or something. But there's times when I've been on a movie for 18 months and longer. And it's like, and I've done 10 drafts, you know what I mean? So it's like, when I sign on to something, I learned that the hard way that it's like, you want to make sure that the people that you're working with, you have a, you know, it's like a positive experience, a good rapport. And also that the story that you care about it enough that, you know, you're, if you're rewriting it 10 times over 18 months, I had one movie that, like it was a summer movie and then it became a Christmas movie and you know, and it was based on a book and so, you know, I like to be, you know, to be invested in it, mm-hmm. which may be bad advice. I don't know.
I think I'm slowly getting to that spot, but it's scary sometimes to say no to like a paycheck to be realistic. Yeah. Depending on your situation, like sometimes I'm like, I shouldn't say no to this, but yeah,
exactly. And like when I was, and same here too, right? Like you have to kind of look at what you're doing and sometimes it's like, oh, this is perfect timing, perfect movie at perfect time. And that I, you know, but and I was saying yes to everything at the beginning because I was so excited, like people are asking me to do this. Like I've been, you know, you're waiting for this opportunity your whole life. And then all of a sudden they're there. And so I didn't know how to say no. And it's just that I had to for my own mental health and wellness because I was writing TV and on the weekends, which I didn't have because I was on TV and we were writing TV and we were 17 hour days, 7 days a week, and then still trying to write a Christmas movie. And then when that one finished, I'd deliver it in the morning, no, at night. And then the next morning I'd have to do the next one and then deliver that at night. Next morning, go on the next one. Like it was just such an overlap for so many months that, I just didn't have a life and, you know, and so I've had to learn to say no. And I'm very grateful that I can do that now. And, you know, but.
When you are given a pitch, what are you being given? What's being presented to you? How much are you given and how much do you come up with?
Sometimes it's a book that the producer has optioned and then, they'll say, can you write a holiday rom-com out of this?
And would you have to pitch? Would you have to read the book and say, this is what I would do? Or yeah. this?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Other times I've been given like one pagers from producers that are just like bullet points. Like, they're like, what do you think of this?
They had a Christmas dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hide it.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's all over the place. Sometimes it's like up to three pages, but usually it's pretty small pitch. Or sometimes it's just verbal. Like, this is what I imagine. I don't know. It's all over the place. So depends on the producer.
And, do you feel when you get a pitch like that, do you ever say, I'm into it, but could we do this instead? Or what if this, like, how much leeway do you feel? Do you have to offer an alternative that excites you more? So,
yeah, I'm starting to do that more. I think at the beginning, I was just like, I didn't want to offend anyone or anyone's ideas or anything. But yeah, I'm definitely getting more comfortable just saying like, just simple things like this that actually doesn't make sense because of this, you know? And I've seen work that I've done where it like bugs me that I didn't say anything because some aspects like don't make sense. And I just kind of like did what they said, but I would like moving forward to be more like, be more vocal about this doesn't make sense or this doesn't ring true or this character feels a little one dimensional. Cause it makes my job more fun and it makes the movie better. So,
yeah. Right. And Kirsten, you were saying, you know, sometimes you're brought on to projects that are already existing. Mm-hmm. What's an example when you're tasked with that? Like what are they asking of you specifically? Are they saying do this with this project? Or are they saying, is it more general?
Yeah, it's funny. That's happened a lot. And in fact, I think every Christmas movie that I've done, except for Cross Country Christmas, was an existing script that I was came to me with. With Cross Country Christmas, the producer, Jim Head, who was an executive producer with Rachel Lee Cook, who is the star, they had an idea and it was just like a small paragraph. And so then they came to me and then I sort of fleshed it out. But when it comes to me as a, like an existing project, it's tough, right? Because it's someone else's work. And it's like, okay, so you see the script and you read it and it, whether you resonate with it or not. And the ones I've done, those are all ones that I was like, yeah, I can see a way that I can bring something to it, or I can see maybe what the issues are that you're concerned about. So like how to fix it. So I'll give them, Hallmark and the producers, my sort of take on it. That's usually what they want.
Saying this is what we think is the issue, and you're coming to them and saying, "Here's how I would solve it."
It's a combination, yeah. Like they want trying to, you know, it's every movie's different, right? Everything's different because it's every time is a different executive, right? And there's so many different executives at Hallmark, and there's been turnover over the years. So some of my favorite ones are not there anymore, but there's still a lot of good ones.
What makes you like an executive? When you say someone's your favorite, why are they your favorite? Like, what makes you like an executive and not like an executive in a working relationship?
Just the way that you're treated and the notes that you're given.
Okay, so partly creative, partly interpersonal.
Yeah, it's you know, yeah, and sometimes, you know, you just gel with people, right? Like there's certain people where you're like, oh yeah, and all that. And then you can like riff off each other with notes and you really feel heard and supported. And they're, it's really nice when they can give positive feedback or be complimentary, you know, a little compliment goes a long way as a writer, you know what I mean? when you get notes. So to answer your question, because I think I went derailed, but, basically, so it's kind of a combination of factors. Like I'll read it and see what I think, you know, needs to happen and how I can fix it. But they already have their notes. They already have their notes set on what they want to have happen. And so really, as much as, you know, it's, you're there to help bring it to life and facilitate that, you are there to implement their notes, right? And so they're trying to find the right person that can sort of it's a combination of vision. I think, you know, Hallmark is a very strong brand and they know what they want. And so it's sort of finding a way to articulate that.
Sure. Speaking of brand.
Yeah.
You mentioned, Carly, watching a few Lifetime, watching a few Hallmark, watching a few Netflix. Do they have different templates or different formulas? Would you watch a movie and would you be able to tell if it's Lifetime or Hallmark or Netflix?
I think you can.
I don't know. I think they're quite similar, but there are little tiny differences. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Kirsten, they all go by the same 9-act formula.
Right.
So even Netflix that doesn't have commercials yet, they would still go with the 9-act structure, I believe.
Interesting. The movie I did for Netflix, I didn't have any act breaks in it, but then it moved from MOW to feature film. So maybe that's why. But even when I wrote it, not knowing where it would go, I wrote it without act breaks because I was like trying to break the mold of like this, knowing that I wanted it to be on Netflix when I wrote it. But that's interesting because I can see that. I mean, it seems like the Netflix ones have a slightly higher budget, right? Depending on, they have different levels. And so they can have a little bit higher budget. So, you know, they can shoot in real authentic Christmas, wintertime. But the Hallmark ones have a certain brand and that's the only ones I can speak to. I think Lifetime is very similar, but just maybe it's a little different. You've written, Carly.
I've written mostly Lifetime holiday movies and they're similar to Hallmark, but they're a little more, you can have like a little more adult humor, you know, not like swearing or anything like, I don't know, risky, but like you can have little jokes here and there that are, that can get, I don't know. I feel like there are certain jokes that I would make in a Lifetime script that I would not make in a Hallmark script. It's just, Hallmark's just a little more like they want to stay in a very I don't know, I guess wholesome
family space.
Yeah, and Lifetime's a little more, well, they
push make the boundaries a bit more, yeah, because they have thrillers and that sort of thing. Yeah, so that's totally makes sense. Although I have noticed with Hallmark, like I used to get some pushback because I would always try and put more humor in, or I would try and make it a little bit deeper, a little bit more emotional. And I would notice in the notes, like some of those things, it's like, why don't we just cut that joke? Or they would just sort of kind of do a little sweep of the things that were I hold dear to me. And I saw, you know, like the parts that I thought were the funniest or like the most emotional would kind of get a little sweep off the top. But I've noticed in the last maybe year or so that's shifting too. And they are pushing a little bit more boundaries. Cause I just executive produced a movie for Hallmark that airs this weekend and was sort of the role of showrunner on it. Like I was sort of oversaw all the creative and, script, you know, through production post. It was an amazing experience. And the exec I worked with, was awesome. And she was much more, trusting and sort of like allowing compared to some execs that were very hands-on and like, no, don't do that. No, don't say that. You know, so she really allowed that. So I don't know if that is representative of just sort of the changing of the brand, or each exec has a slightly different approach. But there were, you know, we were allowed to go a little deeper certain things, and that was great for me.
I'm so curious about this. I think I understand the joke part, that, you know, cutting some of the jokes. I get that. But can you talk a little more about the emotion or the going deeper? Like what do you mean they don't want it deeper? Like, what does that mean?
This is a tough one. So I have a couple of movies that it actually would happen all the time. And I would just be always, you know, people would be like, you're just too tied to it. Like, you just have to like not care so much. I'm like, no, but it's so important to the characters to have this, you know, to really pay that off. And, so this movie I did, Love Under the Rainbow, we actually the producer came to me with this idea. I want to make a movie about rainbows. And I was like, great. So I made a dead mom. And I like really like, you know, got into this, like making the story mean something. And we shot it first and then sold it to Hallmark. And afterwards, and that's sort of the way that that production company works, is he'll usually fund them first and then sell them, which kind of gives you a little bit more creative control. But then when Hallmark bought it, it was a finished movie. And they did their own edit afterwards. We're like, yeah, let's just sweep off some of this stuff. So we have the Hallmark version that aired. And then there's the version that aired in Canada, which is a little bit different movie. So like there's a whole piece about the little girl. She chases rainbows because she thinks her mom, she's going to find her mom at the end of a rainbow, like the Rainbow Bridge. Mm-hmm. And so the original title of the movie was Chasing Rainbows. And so she's a little girl and she just has this in her mind. She's obsessed with rainbows and she wants to be a rainbow chaser because she thinks she's going to find her mom. And so the whole piece is when she finally goes and chases rainbows and she realizes her mom's not there. You know, it's a very emotional scene. And they kind of like, well, let's just cut back that little bit, you know, like this kind of took cream off the top. So it doesn't, you don't really know, like you don't get.
Not too painful. They don't want their characters to be in too much pain.
I think it was just, yeah, at that point it was, they, you know, and it's just interesting. And I don't know if it was certain execs or if that was just the brand all around, but they didn't want to really go to that place of really, really hitting that emotional piece. So if you watch the version that aired on City TV, you see a little bit more of it. And you see more of the jokes too. There's some stuff with Peter Benson, who's so funny. And those jokes got to stay in, most of them. And then that also happened last year with a movie that I directed. My director's cut is very different than the movie that you see. And I didn't have any say on that. So that was hard for me to, because the whole emotional arc for the character and the whole purpose doesn't make sense, I think, when you watch it, because they cut out another dead mom, but you know, they cut out the whole the reason why she's so attached to, you know, and there's like kind of like a magical element receiving a message from her mom, sort of from the, like where she knows what to do because she kind of calls out to her mom, and they sort of cut around that a little bit. So it
sounds beautiful. I'm sorry it got cut.
It's okay. I mean, you know, it just felt a little bit more watered down, and I just feel like it didn't have the emotional resonance, but I don't know. I thought it was very heartwarming and touching, but I'm it's not my decision to make. So
I know from pitching television to Canadian networks that a lot of times they say what they're looking for is easy listening television, or once, you know, I was told we're looking to create television that people could fold their laundry to. like they want you to be in a bandwidth that's not going to challenge people too much, or
and totally right. I mean, I guess I'm a boundary pusher that way. I just want to go deeper, you know. And maybe that's it, is they just want to keep it really like cozy, you know, like let's just have it be cozy. People they're cooking, they don't want to be crying.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, when I asked you what are the ingredients, most of the things you mentioned off the top were about tone, right? And a sense of feeling. So I guess that's largely what Christmas is and like nostalgia is, right? Isn't looking at that's so interesting.
Then, you know, it's so interesting, but that's where I don't know if it is per executive or if things have shifted, because then I don't have time to watch all of them because there's so many, but I, you know, I have certain friends that have made different movies or ones that you go, oh God, that one looks so good. I got to make sure I tune into that one. You know, I try and PVR as many as I can. I watch what I can. And I've seen some that really do hit a deep emotional resonance. Right. So I think it maybe just depends on the project, the timing, how it's said. Maybe I didn't do it right. Like, I don't know, you know, I think there's maybe a lot of factors.
I've experienced that stuff too.
Have you? Oh yeah, I'd love to hear. You had that happen?
I mean, I get it all the time. Like it's getting too vulnerable or it's getting too emotional. We want our viewers to feel like warm and cozy and not to stir up and trigger them in any way.
That's it.
Sounds like they want everyone to feel safe.
Yeah.
And this movie I wrote called Christmas Pen Pals, it was starring Sarah Drew from Grey's Anatomy. And there's this one scene where she like gives it her all. She's really upset. She's grieving another mom situation. And I was there on set and like watching her act. I was like, this is incredible. She's so good. And it almost didn't make it because they were like, it's too much. Like it's too much emotion. And it ended up staying. And it's like one of the best scenes in the movie. But it's like, yeah, it's interesting because I find those scenes really powerful. But I guess for some people, it's too much. At Christmas time, maybe you don't, if you have lost someone close to you, you don't want to have those feelings. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Back. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, whenever I write, I always like my whole thing is like to give people hope, right? So I never write it to scar someone or to leave them feeling worse than when they started. I want them to have some sort of healing experience when they watch it, so they feel like it was a 90 minutes well spent, that they leave there feeling like there was something that was healed or inspired in them. That's just my mandate all around. I don't want to waste people's time if I can make them laugh and make them feel good and heal in some way. But I've noticed that. And it's funny because when we have in scripts, they cry or they break down or they, you know, they're, I've noticed that the notes can be very specific, that it's like, ooh, you know, you know, no need to say that. Like, you don't need to put that she breaks down in tears or she sobs or like, let's just pull that back a little bit. And then when we shoot it, sometimes we can still have them break down in tears and cry, but maybe not advertise that's what's going to happen. Then let the actors find
not an ugly cry. Maybe a, but not an ugly cry.
Not an ugly cry. But like, let them, you know, don't force it on the actor that they're going to now here cry in this moment, like let it be found organically. But they have asked to sort of pull that back in some of the drafts I've noticed. And then it still happens maybe in shooting, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Going off what you were saying about your Sarah Drew scene that got to stay, is there anything, any project or a choice or a scene that you fought for that you're, or a project that you're particularly proud of and why? Or maybe you told us already because you just told us about this scene.
I guess for me, I think Snowden Christmas will always have a special place in my heart. It was the first thing I wrote on spec. It was the first thing that came out. It made me feel like I was a real writer. And the two leads in that movie, like they had such good chemistry and the production design was so amazing. And the director like really took me under his wing and was, you know, he made me write scenes on set and, you know, he made me feel like a part of the process. And I still talk to like the actors to this day. Like, I don't know. It's very, and I love the finished product. It plays all the time on the W Network. And I'm like, man, I wish I had residuals on that. It's probably my favorite for a lot of reasons. It's also just like a good movie, which is not always the case.
Yeah. That's awesome. That was your first one?
It was my first one, like by myself.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I kind of had that with my first one too. Like the Love on the Slopes was, they brought me on set. I was allowed to be on set for like the whole movie basically. We were shot in Whistler and they like brought me there and like really let me be a part of the whole production of it. And that was really special. And it was just a great experience. I'm also still friends with the actors. Was just talking with them yesterday, actually one of them. There's parts of it that I'm really proud of, like certain scenes. I'm like, oh, still tear up when I watch that, you know? Like, so I think for me, it's more like moments in certain parts of some of my movies where I'm like, that scene still like affects me, or that one is really funny. There's lots of like funny moments in Cross Country Christmas and then one emotional one. I think that one and Love on the Slow, I don't know, Love on the Road, but they all have a special place, right? Like, and some stand out more than others, and but they all kind of have a special place. Good moments, I guess. Oh, are we muted?
Mute, I think.
Right. My son's home from school, and he was rummaging through the fridge and very distracting. And I had to mute so you would hear him unwrapping a popsicle. What tips do you two have for writers that want to get into writing holiday movies of the week?
Well, I mean, Carly, you seem to have maybe like the more success story in that. I think you should give yours first.
I mean, hustle, as you've already said.
Yes, hustle. I think you should write what you would watch. That's important. It makes the process a lot more fun and will make the movie better. For me, it was just writing scripts on spec, at least two, I would say. And then what I did is I just emailed every agent that I know has represented writers who make these movies, and you can easily find that information on IMDb Pro. The agent I have now, he was the only person that responded. So
only need one.
And that's my advice, because there's so many avenues. It's only getting bigger, it feels like. So there's spaces for everyone to sell a Christmas movie. So just write something that feels fresh and fun for you, and then try and get yourself an agent who can make the deals happen.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good advice. And then I love hearing that worked out for you. I know people ask me all the time, and I'm always like, to me, it's like everyone's journey is different, and what worked for me might not work for you, and what works, you know? And so, I mean, I've been in the industry 22 years, and it's been a really long road for me to get to be a writer. I didn't even believe it. I went into film to be a director, and it wasn't till 7 years later, 2008, where I was like, maybe I could be a writer. Like, maybe that's really what I want to do, but I didn't believe in myself. And then it took another 7 years before I actually like had the guts to become a freelance writer. So, you know, like it's a process. And nobody knew me when I went freelance, and I had 3 produced credits, but nobody knew me. So I actually tried to get an agent. I had 3 produced credits, and it was really tough. And then all of a sudden it was, because I worked in the industry as a script supervisor and development, I sort of knew some people. And it was, for me, I think it's really networking too. And it's like fostering the relationships that you do have and people that you do know, and get your foot in the, like some, maybe, I mean, maybe the people listening are already, you know, working writers. They're just like, oh, poop, I'll just write another spec and, you know, get it out there. But maybe this is someone who's watching who has a dream to be a writer, and they want to write a Christmas movie, and they're not in the industry. And it can be tough, you know. It's like, I think it's fostering the relationships that you have, you know, really writing. If you have an idea, write it. And like Carly says, like, you know, write some specs, scripts, ones that you want to see, but like really polish them, get them as strong as you can, have people read them, give notes, like make it as strong as you can, maybe enter it in a contest, like just try and get yourself out there. If you want to work on set or in production in some way, if you're trying to break in and you want to be a writer, but it sometimes helps. Like I was a script supervisor. I worked in many different jobs, and it's because of that, like I actually got my job on Chesapeake Shores. I was the script coordinator because I had done that job forever. I wasn't hired as a writer, but the showrunner was like, we'll try and get you a script in season 2. And then because I was a hustler and like willing to do anything, he gave me a script in season 1. And like it's one of those things that I think it's be willing to, like, that was always the feedback I got. It's like, you're so willing, and which, you know, within reason, guys have boundaries, but like be willing to do whatever it takes, in the sense that like when I was a freelance writer and nobody knew me, I went to Starbucks every day to write my first pilot for 6 weeks. And every day I showed up and I wrote, because I was telling the universe that I'm like going to be a writer now. And like, but nobody knew me, and I, you know, and, but it was just like putting in that effort. And I think if you put in the effort and you believe in yourself and you write it, I don't know. I just think there's magic in the world, and it will work out. It will. It's like it may take a long time. And that's all I'm just trying to encourage, is that it took me a long time, and, you know, to see any sort of benefits of it. but that's a long answer, but I just, it's just write, try and meet people, talk to people. If you can contact agents, great. Sometimes they want to see, I've noticed with agents, like they don't, some of them will hustle and get work for you, but most of the jobs I've got come to me. They don't actually contact my agent. So it's relationships I've made, and, or they hear about me through word of mouth, and then they're like, oh, and they reach out to me, producers will reach out to me, which is great. But it's like, you kind of in this industry, you kind of have to do a lot of the work yourself. Like my agent is amazing. And I love her and she hustles, but I'm also hustling. You know what I mean? Like it's like
work harder for you than your own.
Yeah. And if you're just relying on them, like, why are you going to get me another, you know, you have to be also like coming up with ideas or reaching out to people or, you know, I think it's
proactive.
If you want to make it and have things that, you know, you have to be putting in the effort, I think, then you're rewarded.
Amazing. Great advice. Thanks, you two. I am going to move to some questions.
Yeah. Looks like we've got a lot of them here. So. Holy smokes.
All right. Can you both talk more about the grind that you mentioned of getting your Christmas scripts produced? I mean, if there's anything to add that I know you've already talked quite a bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just always hustling. I mean, I recently wrote a script that I'm really trying to sell. It's not a holiday movie and it's still a rom-com, but it's like I'm setting up meetings. I'm reaching out to different producers I've met over the years, some actors, like, yeah, just because you have an agent doesn't mean it's going to be like easy. You really have to keep connecting with people, pitch people, network. Yeah, I don't know. It's finding opportunities wherever you can and following up with people. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. I think actually, you know what? I think you guys have talked a fair bit about that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, and it looks like there's like, you know, people want like formatty sort of like.
Yeah. You know, I was going to ask, if you could talk a bit more about the 9-act structure.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So it's a 3-act movie. They just break it into 9 acts because of commercial breaks. And it's funny because I think Hallmark was the first to do 9 acts. When I first started, I think it used to be 8 acts and then Hallmark had turned to 9. And so now it's like a 9-act structure. The first act is always the longest and it's about like anywhere, I think between like 18 and 23 pages, you know, first act. And it's the end of act one is sort of the same as any end of act one. It's like your hero is like beginning their journey. At that point, the male and female lead have like met at least once or twice kind of by that point. And they're now connected and sort of catapulted on the journey together in whatever way that is for the story. Act five is the midpoint where there is some kind of big turn, some kind of reveal, something shifts. It's like, you know, where it could be a high or a low, depending on the story. End of act seven is kind of like a moment where you could have the kiss or the near kiss. Cause sometimes you can have more than one in a movie now, but, and end of act eight is like the all is lost, all hope is lost moment where, you know, the big fight. And then act nine is sort of the conclusion and everything wraps up. And so I'd say within that every act break, so each act after that is like when they air, it's like no less than like 6 or 7 minutes or something. But I think they're anywhere from like, you know, 8 to 12 pages, depending. Right. And you want the script to be around 105 pages. Like, I think it kind of varies a little bit. Some are, I think, up to like 106 max, but then they might make you cut it back to be like 99 pages. Like, it just depends because airtime is like 83 or 84 minutes. So there you have like 15 minutes of extra stuff that's been shot that now needs to be cut. And usually almost every time there's a storyline, some storyline gets cut out of a movie because you need to make you know, runtime, and they don't really have any flexibility there. It's like 84 minutes. And like, we've lost like the really sweet old man who didn't believe in Christmas and had the happy ending. That whole storyline got cut out of Return to Christmas Creek. It was like, oh, it's the emotional storyline.
That actor really doesn't believe in Christmas anymore either.
Yeah. And so it's like, it just didn't have room for it. But, and so that every act break, so they're about like, you know, act two, act three, like they're like 8 to 13 pages. Usually those ones are like 12 or 13 pages, I find. And every act break, you want a bit of a cliffhanger. You want a little bit of a turn, something exciting, usually between your two leads, something for them where there's a reason for people to come back after the commercial break, you know? But I talked a lot. So Carly, do you have anything to add to that?
I mean, you said everything perfectly, so I don't have much to add, except if people are interested, this will explain it really well, this book.
Amazing.
Rosalind Muir. Do you want to take a little screenshot? It talks about the 9X structure and basically says everything Kirsten just said.
Great. We've got a question here from Elizabeth. When you're figuring out the character beats and themes for the story, what are some of the things that help you get into the voice of the characters and tie it all together?
That's a good question. I hate to sound so cheesy, but it kind of just happens organically. It's kind of just like flows out of you. Before you start, you got to just think about your characters and who they are. Maybe pick someone in your real life that kind of reminds you of that character. But I don't know. I find that it just kind of comes to you in the first act and then just flows out. But I know that sounds kind of cheesy.
Yeah. So some people like say, oh, they practice writing scenes to kind of get the dialogue. Like they'll just, even scenes that aren't in their movie, they'll just write like random scenes with their characters just to try and find their voice. I've heard other writers speak about that. I'm like, oh, that's cool. For me, maybe my characters are, well, they're all a little bit me. Like even like the crazy wild characters are a little bit me. Like I find that I'm a little bit everyone or they're influenced by people that I know, you know? So it's just, whatever comes out organically. It's like, I find characters just tell you what they want you to say. Like if you're really in the zone, you're like, whoa, I didn't expect you to say that. You know, you can be surprised by them sometimes.
Yeah, I know. It's true. It's very true.
Channeling. I love it. We have a question here about budget. If you're asked to write for budget right out of the gate, or if you're, you know, you go for it and then rein it in after. How much do you think about budget right from out of the gate?
I sort of think about it only because I think I have a bit of a producer's brain and not every writer does, but over the years, you just learn you can't have too many locations. You can't have too many speaking characters. But if you think about that stuff too much while you're writing, it's a little bit of a downer. So I would suggest just writing what you think is best and then going over it again, maybe, and just like, you know, Kirsten said, the snowball fight scene. Well, depending on when the movie's shot, it might have to be taken out, or like a tobogganing scene. But there's always like in the ninth act, there's usually some big like event, like a Christmas festival or party that's like a big thing that usually some of the budget goes towards. So I don't know, just be mindful of too many characters, too many locations, I guess.
That's such a good point. And in fact, yeah, I'm like you, where I've sort of been, it's an innate in me now. Like you just sort of know how to write production friendly scripts. Like, and maybe because I'm not an action writer, I'm never going to have a huge like helicopter come down and like torpedo the town, or, you know, like you have to sort of think about in those sort of lines, like what is, you know, going to sort of fall into this $2 to $4 or $5 million movie. But that's definitely the case of like, I had to do that with the movie that I just produced, go through. And once we had a script and it was like, okay, now let's do a pass where we actually cut down characters. So it's like, we can have a maximum of 15 characters. I think it was the speaking roles. So we had to like cut certain characters, combine certain characters, and you don't even realize how many suddenly like just like random people on the street, they're like, oh, hey, Merry Christmas. And all these different characters that add color to the movie, but really you can't end up using them. Right. So it's those kinds of things, locations. If you can combine certain locations, certain things, I mean, you obviously don't want to, hinder your project where you make it so small that it's not what you want to write. Like really try and write the movie you want to, but do keep that in mind. I think because you don't, I also know that like reading scripts as a producer or whatever, and you see one come in and you can just tell when someone doesn't have that experience and they're like, whoa, this is not possible, you know? So I think the more that you kind of follow those sort of rules or whatever, the more you're seen as like someone who knows what they're doing in this right. world, you know?
Understand the container.
Yeah.
Exactly. Your producer hat on a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, we've got a question here. Thank you. From Katie Kerr. How many pitches do you normally send into Hallmark or Lifetime before one gets sent to Outline? Carly?
I never send pitches directly to Hallmark or Lifetime. It's always through a producer or a production company that I know well at this point. I would say, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5, but sometimes those pitches are like a one pager. It's like one page, just because I don't want to spend too much time if it's just going to be like, no, we don't want to do that. So I don't know. I'll do like 4 pitches a year and just see where they land.
That's amazing. Wow. That's great. I'm always so inspired by that. I've only pitched to Hallmark twice. I had 2 Christmas movies, which came, both were came to me from producers. One was a book and one was like an idea that a producer had who I'd worked with. And you know, can you flesh it out? And I wrote like 4-page pitches. Like this is back when they wanted longer pitches and neither of them got bought by Hallmark. So I actually haven't had any success on that front. I know at the time, I don't know if they still do things this way. They would get so many pitches and they had sort of a process of piles. Like sometimes they'd have a pitch with an actor already attached. Well, you know, if you have Jesse Metcalf or, you know, Autumn Reeser or somebody already attached, that kind of goes in a special pile where they maybe are looked at more quickly. But if they're just sort of a regular pitch, they would go and have like their pitch days or pitch meetings a couple times a year. I think, I don't know exactly. And where they would all sit down and like look at them and go through them and they have their pitch board and then they'd make their decision. So sometimes you'd be waiting for months and months and months. And I don't know if that process has been sort of expedited, but they have so much that I feel like they're always just sort of a little bit like behind the, you know what I mean? Like they're always trying to race to catch up because they shoot all their Christmas movies at the same time. And then they got seasonal other ones that it's like, okay, now we got to go through the pitches and get the next things on board. So that can be kind of a long process of waiting, but I guess it just depends. Like, you know, if they have the producer has a great in with an executive there and maybe they just send a paragraph through, they can get an answer right away. Right. So it is better, I think, if you can go through somebody, a producer.
Yeah. And for Gingerbread Christmas that is out this year, me and my friend wrote the treatment for that. It was like 3 or 4 pages and it was called something totally different. And it was about chocolate. And so it was like a year later, we didn't hear anything. And a year later, we got a call that Food Network was interested, but they wanted to change it to gingerbread instead of chocolate. And so, yeah, you can't be like too precious because sometimes it's just like, okay, like, sure, you know.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
Chocolate's not Christmassy enough.
They said it's like not like colorful enough.
That's awesome. I have a question here from Katie Lawrence. Is there room for queer Christmas romances in the current market?
Yeah, there is one. Oh gosh, I can't remember the name that just aired on Hallmark this year, I think.
Was that a first?
Oh, I don't know if it's, yeah. No, there's been a, oh geez. There hasn't been many, but there's definitely, they're opening up to that now, which is great. Mm-hmm. So they hasn't been, a lot, but there's definitely been changing that.
It sounds like this is something that's changing, and it seems like people are open to it and there's room for it now.
I think it had Jonathan Bennett in it.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name, but
I've written pitches actually where the producers will call me and say, are you okay with it being a queer love story instead of whatever you wrote? And I'm like, yeah, of course. So it's definitely out there that people are looking for that kind of stuff, and just don't pitch to a Great American Family. But every other network will do it.
Maybe not there.
Yeah.
Quite a few people have asked, how do you become an approved Hallmark writer? I'm sure you can swap in Lifetime or whatever for that, but what is that process?
I know I put that out there and I don't know if I can answer it properly because I don't know what it normally is. I don't know if they just look at your resume and see what else you've done, or they want to read samples. I'm not sure what their traditional sort of process is. Maybe they look at your credits, depending if they're not familiar with your name. For me, it was sort of roundabout. It was one of those things where they asked for forgiveness rather than I don't think I would have been approved in season one of Chesapeake had they just went to Hallmark and be like, hey, we have this girl. She's got some movie credits, but like not really. She doesn't really have any TV credits yet. She's great though. We really want to, I don't know if they would have said we approved.
But you were already on staff. So that, right?
I was on staff as the script coordinator.
Yes. And so that's one way. All that helps, right?
Exactly. And it was John Tinker, who was the showrunner in season one, who literally gave me one of his episodes because they were all contracted out. So he had to give up one of his episodes to give it to me, which is I still probably owe him my life for that. And it was because of that. And then Hallmark read it and the producer's like, oh, hey, she's great. And then I just sort of became approved because of that. And so that's how my approval process happened. I was very lucky and fortunate, and I know that. And so then a producer came to me for a Hallmark movie. The approval process was easier. They were like, oh, she's done this and she's working on Chesapeake and da 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 da. And then they were like, oh, okay, yeah, great. But they also were very hands-on with me on my first movie and gave really kind of had some good kid gloves to kind of guide me through the process because it was my first time, and they were very lovely about it because there is such a specific brand in the way that they do things, and they, making sure the characters were developed enough. And I had to write 6 outlines, I think. But I don't know, traditionally, I think, usually it's, here, these are who we're considering for this or that. And it's what are their credits? And so it could be an easy approval, or it could be the producer says, I really believe in this person. Can you read something of theirs? And then they go, yeah, sounds great.
Okay.
I would go by what Kirsten says, because my relationship with Hallmark is they reject me a lot. Sometimes they love me, So it's whatever they if they resonate with the idea, then that's when I'll get a good call. And sometimes they're like, nah, this isn't for us, So they keep me on my toes.
Yeah. And me too, right? I mean, it's depends on the executive. Some like me, some I don't think like me. So,
We have time for just maybe one or two more questions. I think you've answered this, but someone would like to know if you're writing the act outs into your scripts. Now, I know you said for Netflix, that was not the case, correct? But what about for Lifetime movies?
Yeah, I'm always told to write the acts in. It's just easier as a group to really decide where the commercial should go. And sometimes that changes in the editing room, but it's good to have everyone on the same page with how you want to end each act on sort of a cliffhanger or a little romantic look,
Right.
Yeah.
I don't, often, you know, when I'm writing something where they're for Netflix, we write the act breaks in, even if we take them out after, just so you have that same rhythm and shape to your story. You know, it's there, even if it's not in on the page.
Yeah, you need them for Hallmark movies. You need to have the acts there because they need to know. I mean, everything is very, it's very well organized, right? It's a well-run machine, and you know, in posts, like, this is the run times. And like Carly says, they could, the act breaks could change in post depending on how the edit goes, but you need to sort of know what these beats are so they can,
Yeah. All right. We've got one last question. For negotiating your salary, how do you ask for what you think you deserve?
Well, once you're in the guild, the Writers Guild, I'm just at the point where I make Writers Guild rates. I don't make like Mindy Kaling rates or anything like that. So I'm not like, it's $1 million. I am grateful to make, you know, what the Writers Guild rates are. And
which are pretty generous.
Which are, right? So I was a non-union writer for a long time. And in fact, my first Hallmark movies were non-union. So I was still paid well compared to some non-union, but it was a different rate. And then I joined the union, and then you're sort of protected. That's why we have our wonderful guild who can protect
the union. Yeah.
To make sure that, you know, there's a lot of times I've noticed that that they'll come to me like wanting me to take over a project and be like, it's just a polish. It's just a light polish. Mm-hmm. And then I read it and I was like, well, it's a little more than a polish. This might be a page one rewrite, you know? And, but then it's also sort of checking, like, am I the right person for this? Cause this is how I see it. And then they're like, you know, every time they end up being fair, you know, and it's like, this is really what it's going to require. And that's something that I've had to negotiate and speak about, is that, like, you want to not feel resentful or taken advantage of. And I have been taken advantage of many a times in my career because I overgave, because I, you know, and working for free, doing things that I probably shouldn't have done. And, but you know, that's sort of the slippery slope, I think, is that they'll try and pay you, not just talking Hallmark, just in general in the industry, they will try and pay you for a polish when it's a rewrite. And those are two very different fees and two different amounts of work, but there is kind of a gray area to, like, when does it constitute rewrite? Cause like, so it's being fair, I think, you know, and asking for that if you feel, and it's no hurt asking, but I think also, be a team player. I think you always got to be a team player. Don't be over demanding things, like, really read the room. I think, you know, like,
The WGC and my agent, they make those two things combined, make sure that I'm being paid accordingly and well. And, but if you don't have either of those things, I would say, generally you should be getting around 2 or 3% of the budget. So if the movie is like a $2 million movie, that's a good chunk of change. So just be mindful. I mean, if it's your first writing credit, I mean, take like what you can, because that'll help you. If you're now have a writing credit, that's worth, like, I don't know, that's worth a lot. So
in your career,
that
is the credit is the investment.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. But as you start to grow in your career, be more mindful of what you deserve, and hopefully you'll be a part of the WGC.
That's right. Well, thank you, Carly and Kirsten, for sharing your experience and knowledge and insights with all of us today.
You've been listening to Writers Talking Screen, a Writers Guild of Canada podcast. Thank you to our technical producer, Philip Vukovic, and thank you for listening.